Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and thank you for joining the National MS Society Eating Well and Eating Easy. Your host, Jackie Smolzinski, will begin.
Thank you all so much for registering for our West Region teleconference. We're so pleased to have you all on the line with us this evening. This teleconference is one of many free and helpful programs and services available through the National MS Society. From support groups to care management, financial assistance to political advocacy, we are here to help and partner with you. You can access any of our programs and services by calling 1-800-344-4867. The National MS Society also hosts many fundraising events to connect people with the Society and raise money that supports not only these programs and services, but also valuable research in order to stop this disease, restore what's been lost, and end this disease forever. We would also like to take this opportunity to recognize and thank Genzyme and Questcor for providing educational grants to support tonight's program. Maintenance of general good health is very important for persons with MS or any chronic disorder. A well-balanced and carefully planned diet will help to achieve this goal. During this teleconference, our featured guest speaker, Denise Nowak, will teach you how to identify strategies to easily integrate healthful eating into your lifestyle, recognize the interrelationship between aspects of your diet that could positively impact overall health, MS, and manage symptoms and determine what gets in the way of eating well. For more than 30 years, registered dietitian Denise Nowak has designed and provided health and nutrition education programs to individuals, community health organizations, fitness facilities, corporations, medical centers, and universities. Over the past 18 years, she has focused her work on those who are living with multiple sclerosis. As the Executive Vice President of Chapter Programs with the Southern California and Nevada Chapter of the National MS Society, she has established programs that promote wellness and healthy living for people with MS. Denise is the author of Food for Thought and has been a contributing author for the Healthy Living section of the Society's Momentum magazine. This call is being recorded, and a link to the recording as well as PowerPoint slides will be emailed out to participants within 1 week. Please stay on the line after the call to answer 3 short questions regarding your thoughts about tonight's program. On that note, I thank you again for being on the call this evening and would like to hand the call over to Denise Nowak. Denise, you may begin.
Thanks, Jackie. It's really exciting to be on the call with all of you. I think we have a banner attendance this evening, and no doubt this is a topic that couldn't be more exciting. As Jackie mentioned, I've been with the Society for almost 18 years now, and now more than ever before, are we seeing some really interesting, exciting things come out as it relates to the nutritional factors and the impact of MS. So what I'm going to do this evening is to walk through a little bit of what we know, what we don't know, and what we're looking at in terms of understanding the possible disease-modifying effects of diet, and also begin to understand the interrelationship between how your diet can impact MS, your health, and in managing your symptoms. So let's get going here. So as we start looking at things that can influence perhaps the prognosis of MS, let's start with vitamin D, because this really is the hottest nutrient under the sun right now as it relates to MS. Certainly, it's in the news from a lot of different perspectives. We understand that with MS, the further we live away from the equator, where there's exposure to ultraviolet light, or less exposure to ultraviolet light, the greater the prevalence of MS. And so the results of studies really have pointed to the importance of vitamin D in minimizing the risk of acquiring or developing MS. But one of the things that we also have been learning is that vitamin D deficiency, you know, and so that means if our body doesn't have enough vitamin D, may actually worsen both the clinical course of MS and what we call the disease burden, and that's the MS lesions that we might see. And so those with higher levels of vitamin D or more adequate blood levels of vitamin D have fewer new lesions. So where do we get vitamin D? I think that's the part that's important. About 90% of our vitamin D can come from skin exposure to the sun. Our body actually makes vitamin D, and it doesn't take very much sunlight. However, what we're learning is that as a population as a whole, we're seeing lower blood levels of vitamin D, and we don't know quite the reason why. Are we spending less time out in the sun? Are we putting sunscreen on, and therefore our body's not able to make vitamin D as effectively? And it's interesting because even an SPF of 8, and really, who uses an SPF of 8? We're all using 15, 30, 50, you know, to try to minimize our risk of skin cancer. But an SPF of 8 can even decrease the body's ability to make vitamin D by 85%. And that's pretty significant. There are some dietary sources of vitamin D. We can find them in the cold saltwater fish like cod and salmon and mackerel and sardines. We can also find it fortified in foods like milk and cereal. It's oftentimes fortified in milk because vitamin D is very much important in calcium absorption too. But we don't get very good dietary sources of vitamin D as well. And so supplementation may be a way to get the vitamin D you need. Now, before I go into talking about what amount of vitamin D may be recognized as safe, I first want to say it's really important to know where your blood levels of vitamin D are. And I'm sure many of you have had your vitamin D levels tested. You may know if they're high or if they're low. Typically, we want to see blood levels of vitamin D greater than 50 nanograms per milliliter. That's how it's measured in the blood. And so even when your doctor gives you your results to a lab test like that, pay attention to the number. Don't just pay attention to whether it says, oh, I'm in the mid-range, I'm good. Look at that number, because 50 nanograms per milliliter is on the higher end of levels of vitamin D in the blood. And so if you are low, then it may take extra supplementation to bring you up to the higher levels. Generally, vitamin D is a fat-soluble vitamin. We used to think it was toxic at very low levels because fat-soluble vitamins get stored in our body. They don't get discarded like the water-soluble vitamins. And so we're looking at around 2,000 to 4,000 international units now kind of being recognized as being within the safe range. If you look to supplement, the type of vitamin D that is recommended is vitamin D3. Now, there are individuals, if you're low in vitamin D, your physician may have you on levels of 10,000, 20,000, 50,000 international units. I strongly discourage self-supplementing that without a physician's guidance, again, because they're going to watch to see where your blood levels go when you do supplement. And the final thing I want to leave you with is that with vitamin D, every person responds a little bit differently to vitamin D supplementation. So again, another reason to have it monitored more closely by your physician. It's interesting, though, that if you do have low levels of vitamin D and you begin to bring that up, each 10 nanograms per milliliter that you raise that vitamin D closer to the level that's more desirable, there's a 15% lower risk of developing new lesions. And this is what some of the most recent research is showing. So again, vitamin D is very hot, and I think we're going to see a whole lot more with regards to vitamin D, not just with MS, but with other health conditions as well. So I'll step away from vitamin D now, and then we'll take a look at antioxidants. And I think before we talk about antioxidants, it's important to know what antioxidants really do. And these are molecules that actually inhibit the oxidation of other molecules. So in our body, there are free radicals or oxidants, and these are very unstable and reactive molecules. They do damage in the body at a cellular level. We know they're very closely tied to heart disease and cancer, inflammation, and we understand that they are also involved in the disease process with MS. Part of the challenge is that the immune attack in MS itself actually increases free radicals that can cause damage. So it's kind of a vicious circle. There's free radicals that damage the nerve insulating myelin. They can block nerve conduction. They can disrupt the blood-brain barrier. They may actually turn on the immune attack in MS. And the disease process generates more of these. So what becomes important is understanding the role that antioxidants play. And they're rather neuroprotective. And so they can actually, and much of the research has been done in MS-like mice. So not a lot of human research, although there's some trials that are going on with like alpha-lipoic acid, and I think we're going to see some research out on that as well. But the way antioxidants work is they tend to be anti-inflammatory. They tend to protect the blood, help to protect the blood-brain barrier, and we find antioxidants first and foremost from fruits and vegetables, your brightly colored fruits and vegetables. So anything that's red or orange or yellow or green or blue are great sources of antioxidants. In these foods, there are also things called phytonutrients, like flavonoids and phenols, and they all have these fancy names, but they're antioxidant-like, and they boost the power of antioxidant-rich vitamins and minerals, like vitamin C, vitamin E, beta-carotene, which is a precursor to vitamin A. So if we include more of these in our diet, we increase the benefits for fighting off the free radicals that may be in the body. Don't recommend supplementation of these types of vitamins because antioxidants also stimulate the immune system, and one of the things we don't really understand is what part of the immune system is really overstimulated in MS. So there are many aspects to the immune system. So really great dietary sources are recommended at this point. Again, this is an area that I think we're going to be seeing increasing research. We're seeing, I talked about lipoic acid. That is a antioxidant, naturally occurring antioxidant, and there's some research that's going on up at Oregon Health Sciences University. And I think they're wrapping up a current study up there, and I think we'll be seeing some more data coming out from that. Green tea has antioxidant that contains it's called polyphenols, and it also has antioxidant properties that are presumed to be neuroprotective in neurodegenerative disorders. So another thing is curcumin, and curcumin is a yellow, naturally occurring polyphenol. You might think of it as more commonly coming from turmeric. And again, this is another antioxidant, anti-inflammatory type of compound. And again, the research on this is currently in the animal model, but a lot of new areas where these antioxidants are shaking out to perhaps have some impact that may alter the rate of nerve damage. So these are things that you can naturally include into your diet, though. And when we start looking at making dietary changes, just looking at how we make our food choices can be helpful in having more neuroprotective elements to the way that we eat. I think the last area I kind of want to talk about is around the area of fats. Where do fats fit in? What's the skinny on fats? Are fats good? Are they healthy? Are they unhealthy? Well, they're actually a little bit of both. Certainly, when it comes to MS, the jury's kind of out. The research that's been out there on the healthy fats, the unsaturated fats, there has been some research, early research back in I think the 70s that looked at, you know, what role did these polyunsaturated fats do play in reducing relapses, and particularly with omega-3 fats reducing the progress of disability. And these unsaturated fats have some positive health effects. The more recent research around this is kind of questionable, but as overall recommendation in diet, these unsaturated fats are healthy for many other reasons as well. And so they are mildly anti-inflammatory. They may have other benefits that may help with memory, health, heart health, depression, and so, you know, this is an area that you can make positive changes by watching the types of fats you have in your diet. Polyunsaturated fats tend to be liquid at room temperature, and if you were to put them in the refrigerator, they'd be liquid there as well. While saturated fats, or the unhealthy fats in our diet, are more solid at room temperature. So if we think of foods that might be sources of saturated fats, what comes to mind? Like a shortening, butter, the marbling in meats, the skin on chicken, the whole milk dairy products, these are all sources of saturated fats. So what we really want to do from a nutritional perspective is to keep our protein choices lean, look at ways to reduce the saturated fats in our diet, you know, choosing low-fat, 1% non-fat dairy, looking for omega-3 rich sources of fats, and those come from your deep, cold ocean fish, like mackerel, salmon, sardines, tuna. Interestingly enough, those are sources of vitamin D. And if you think about it, these are fatty fish, and the vitamin D is affiliated with the fat in the fish as well. So those are great sources of omega-3s. There are some non-animal sources of omega-3s, like flaxseed, and walnuts are great sources of omega-3. Flaxseeds, you may need to make sure to crush the seeds in order for the omega-3s to be available for absorption. So that's just a little bit about fat. One more thing that I think is worth noting, again, because it's another exciting area. I can't really say a whole lot about this, but it's just like if you were to ask the science community now, what are they looking at that may have some nutritional relationship to MS? It's this whole area of the microbiome, or the gut bacteria, and that the gut bacteria may actually play. You know, our body is about 99% bacteria. And so what role does bacteria play actually in perhaps initiating the disease process and modulating the disease process? And we really don't know at this point in time, but it's a very excited science community out there around this. And I think what we'll be seeing is what role does probiotics play in stimulating the immune responses or modulating immune responses that can impact MS-related symptoms. So keep your eyes and ears open on this one as well. The National MS Society's website's really phenomenal, especially in keeping you current on the latest in research that's being funded and the latest results on research. So if you aren't signed up for sort of a live feed or a current feed on MS research, you can do that by going to our nationalmssociety.org website. So I'm going to stop right there with what we think we know, or what role diet might play in the disease process, and get a little bit more into looking at how can we eat that can make that can enhance your nutritional well-being and help you live well with MS. And if I were to ask you, I'm sure the response would be pretty common across the listeners this evening, what's the biggest issue that you have with MS? I would bet that 9 out of 10 would answer fatigue. And if I take it one step further and say, okay, now, when you're tired, when you're experiencing fatigue, how do you eat? How does that impact the way you eat? Do you grab whatever's at your fingertips? Do you skip meals? Do you eat out because you just don't have the energy to make dinner or make a meal? And the answer is very commonly across the board, one of those, or something else like that. And what happens is with fatigue, MS-related fatigue is certainly a real thing, but there are other contributors to fatigue. It could be poor sleep. It could be depression. It could be lack of exercise. But a poor diet can also impact fatigue. So if you're tired and the consequence is that you don't eat well, it's kind of like a vicious circle. If you're not eating well, you're not getting the nutrients you need to fuel your body. So really here, let's take a look at how we can make eating well easy so that you do get the nutrients that you need. And so you just have to understand food's your fuel, and you have to keep a good source of fuel coming your way. So I'm a big fan of snacking. And anyone who's heard me talk before has heard me say, you know, when I grew up, my mom used to say, don't snack, it's going to ruin your appetite. But in reality, snacking may be a great way for managing energy, maintaining blood glucose levels, and getting the nutrients that you need throughout the day. And snacking is easy compared to making meals. It's just about having the right snacks. Snacks can keep your energy levels high. They can help fight off hunger, and that can play a very important role in managing weight. You know, I know for individuals whose activity levels have changed, whether it's related to MS or something else, you know, makes it more difficult to maintain weight. And you have to manage your calories if you're not going to be spending your energy. So it helps you fight off hunger. It can help you eat less at meals. And I think if with the right snacks, you can really fill the gap in the nutrients that might be missing in your diet. Snacking also helps with concentration, and we do know that fatigue and concentration and cognition kind of go hand in hand as well. When you're tired, it's hard to think more clearly, and so if you're not getting what you need to be able to concentrate well, that plays into the picture as well. So what really makes a good snack? Think of them as little mini meals. So they're about 200 to 300 calories. They're a little bit of protein, a little bit of carbohydrate, and a little bit of fat. So let me give you an example. You can have a little bit of carbohydrate, like an apple, and you could dip it in a little bit of protein and fat, like peanut butter. You can have sliced turkey with a handful of grapes. You can have a fat-free cottage cheese with some veggies. So think about different ways that you like to snack. I'm a grab-and-go type of girl. I like snacking throughout the day. I'll put a serving, like 12 almonds, in a Ziploc bag. You can make your own 100-calorie snack packs, by the way. I'll grab a hard-boiled egg, a carton of low-fat or fat-free Greek yogurt. I'll grab some low-fat crackers. I keep fat-free granola in my file cabinet so that I have something on hand because it's easy to miss meals, and that's not a good thing. So think about ways you can fit snacking into your lifestyle. Keep them in the car with you. Keep them at work with you. Keep them in your travel bag, whether it's a purse or a briefcase or whatever that might be. Keep snacks on hand. But when we really get into trying to manage meals, how do we make it easy? And I'm a big fan also of really just focusing your effort. If you have to concentrate your energy, focus on the main part of your meal, and have a plan. You know, when you get up in the morning, it's probably the time when cognitively you're the strongest. You're not as tired. Jot it down. Think ahead to what you might want to have if the end of the day is the day, the time when you tend to be sabotaged in your eating habits. And then keep the sides and everything else around the main part of the meal simple. I'm buy ready to use a lot, and it's a little bit more expensive to buy things that are pre-cut or pre-cleaned or shredded or chopped, but it cuts easily 5 to 10 minutes off of meal preparation, and that's energy and time that is worth it to you. I consider this as being as energy efficient as you can be, and that's not in your house, but for you and your body. How you set up your kitchen can help keep you energy efficient as well. You know, are your dishes in the dishwasher stored right above the dishwasher so you don't have to walk across the kitchen? Are your pots and pans below your stove? An occupational therapist plays a great role in trying to look at how you can set up your kitchen so that you're not wasting energy just trying to move from point A to point B and pull appliances out and gather what you need to work in your kitchen. When you do have the energy to cook, cook extra. Now everything comes in these wonderful glass containers that you can put a lid on and freeze and in portion sizes that you can just take out and cook. Keep your cleanup easy. And you know what? Takeout isn't a bad thing. Just identify healthy options when you can. I had a woman in one of the classes that I was teaching that liked to shop online and order her groceries online because it just took too much energy for her to go out to the store and just do that kind of shopping. And just know that that can be an option for you if you have that in your area. Many stores are doing that now. And once you invest the time to pick out what you like in that on your personal grocery list, it makes it easy to go back in and reorder. Her mom, when she would have an exacerbation, would just go in and order her groceries so she would have food in the house when she didn't have the energy or feel like even thinking about it. So just some little tips to consider in making meals easy. We talked a little bit about changes in mobility and again, the impact of if mobility is reduced and you're not as active, you need to pay more attention to your calorie consumption because the same amount of calories, you know, at this time may result in that kind of weight gain. So start by looking to cut calories that provide little nutritional value because even 5 pounds of extra weight can add to the fatigue. If you think about it, if you're tired, can you carry around a 5-pound sack of flour? You know, that's not a small amount of weight. So that can impact fatigue as well. Managing weight, I'm just going to speak briefly that diet and exercise goes hand in hand, and I'm not going to get much into the exercise piece of it. More and more we're learning about the benefits of exercise for MS and the functional impact of fitness on day-to-day life, and energy management is such a significant piece of that, and weight management, it plays a very key role. Another area of diet that's important is calcium and the importance of calcium in maintaining bone health. And I know there's been a lot of recent news out there that says, well, is calcium supplementation recommended? If you are if you have osteopenia or osteoporosis, which is common in individuals with MS, a source of calcium is very critical, and vitamin D is important for that calcium absorption. Some of the better sources of calcium in the diet certainly come from fat-free or low-fat dairy products. We get about 300 milligrams of calcium per serving, and we need around 1,000 to 1,200 milligrams of calcium a day. and it is best consumed from food. While it's believed to be rich in those dark green leafy vegetables, there's a compound that's found in those foods that inhibit the absorption of calcium. They're called oxalates. And so while those foods are very nutritious, they may not be your best source for calcium. You can, again, find calcium in fortified foods. So if you're not a fan of dairy or if you're lactose intolerant, you can find it in calcium-fortified foods. For individuals who maybe consume rice milk or almond milk, those are not natural sources of calcium, but you might find those supplemented or fortified with calcium. If you're under 30, 35, you're still building your bone mass, and so it's really important to have good sources of calcium in the diet. If you're over 30 or 35, it's really important that we hang on to every bit of bone mass that we have, because after that, we just tend to lose our bone mass. And so if you supplement calcium, calcium citrate or calcium carbonate are your best sources. Split the dosage up. We talked about 1,000 to 1,200 milligrams of calcium being important each day. Don't take more than 500 milligrams at a time. So have one supplement at one side of the day and one at another time of the day, because it won't absorb well into the body. But exercise, again, does play a very important role in bone health, especially weight-bearing exercise, resistance exercise. Those are important. Other things to consider that where diet may impact symptoms or symptoms may impact your diet. Bladder issues are very common in MS, and one way people often will seek to manage their urinary frequency is by limiting fluids, and fluid restrictions can just lead to dry mouth. It can impact your appetite. And we already know that if you don't eat well, you're not getting the nutrients that you need. For people who have swallowing problems, it can exacerbate swallowing problems, and it could put you at increased risk of kidney stones. So it's important to keep fluids important in your diet. In an easy way to make sure you're getting plenty of fluids, and it just doesn't have to be water, is to take your medications with a full glass of fluids, full glass of water. For many, you're taking medications at least a couple times throughout the day, and so that's one way to keep fluids in your diet. You can water down your meals and snacks, refresh yourself with juice or milk or sparkling water. Just a little word with juices, though, they can be pretty concentrated in carbohydrates and sugars. They're natural sugars, you can dilute that down if you're concerned about those extra calories. Everyone seems to be traveling with their own personal water supply, with a water bottle, a great way to keep fluids on hand. But I think what people might not realize is that 20% of our diet, our daily intake of fluids, can come from the foods that we eat. So if you think of foods that are juicy, like watermelon or lettuce or squash, tomatoes, strawberries, these are all fruits and vegetables that have the highest water content. So again, if you need an excuse to eat your fruits and vegetables, if it's not for the antioxidants, it certainly can be for the fluids, so keep them coming. Fluids also play an important role in managing constipation, and constipation can be another symptom that can be MS-related. It could be a consequence of things related to MS. If you're not as active, if you don't have a good source of fiber in your diet, these can all increase constipation. So fluid, fitness, and fiber are my three Fs. In trying to manage constipation. Fiber comes from whole grains, from fruits and vegetables. The seeds, if you think about the seeds that are on a raspberry or in kiwi or on strawberries, these are all little sources of fiber. Beans and legumes provide a good source of fiber as well. But if you're not used to having fiber in your diet, I would recommend starting slowly, because if you start too fast, it could be a little discouraging because can't grab gas and cramps, and that's no fun. So, again, think about adding fiber at each of your meals. I know that gluten is a big concern for folks, and I just want to speak to gluten for a little bit because I think that a lot of people may be avoiding gluten unnecessarily. And gluten, just for those of you who don't know where gluten is found, gluten is a protein that we find in grains such as wheat and barley and rye. And so if we look at what gluten does for people who are truly gluten intolerant, and these are individuals that are diagnosed with celiac disease, gluten is the trigger for this attack on their intestinal tract. And it attacks the microvilli, and it does damage to the intestine, and it causes diarrhea and bloating and gas. And the way to manage this is to eliminate gluten from the diet. Now, 1% of the people in the population are truly immune or intolerant to gluten. Now, there also is a part of our population that is gluten sensitive. So while they don't have that attack on the intestinal tract, the gluten in the diet may actually cause similar types of symptoms that are related to celiac disease, and that's diarrhea, bloating, gas, fatigue, perhaps difficulty thinking clearly. And while they may not show positive tests to the type of antibodies that are associated with celiac disease, they have these similar types of symptoms. And about 7% of the population may actually be gluten sensitive. We know that the MS population may be more gluten sensitive than the general population as a whole. And there was a research study about 2 years ago or a year and a half ago that spoke to that. But again, not everyone needs to be, not everyone is gluten sensitive. So as a starting point, if you're experiencing these types of symptoms, like this diarrhea or bloating, gaseousness, that foggy brain, talk to your doctor about that, because it may be a reason to try and eliminate gluten to see if you have no reaction, if you improve around your symptoms around that. Now, if you're not experiencing those symptoms, is it necessary to avoid gluten? And it really isn't. It isn't from an MS perspective. So I just wanted to put that into perspective because I think that sometimes there are so many things that are out there around this, it can be confusing. But again, if you're experiencing these types of symptoms, talk to your doctor about it. There's something that can be done. Finally, I think it's just worth talking about what happens when we face this emotional roller coaster of MS, and how does that impact the way you eat. The adverse effects of depression really hit people differently. For some, there's a decreased motivation to eat. There's just not a lack of energy. They lose their appetite. For others, they seek food for solace. You know, eating makes you feel better. It's more comforting. And the consequence of that is overeating and the extra calories that your body may consume. But that being said, it's just more of an awareness to tune in to see how diet and depression impacts the way you eat. I just want to leave you with the thought. Hopefully there's been something I've been able to share this evening that has been helpful in understanding a little bit more about the role that diet might play with MS. If you were to hear this talk a year ago, there wouldn't have been the same sort of messages here. It is a very dynamic time right now as it relates to diet MS, and I think we'll continue to see more on the horizon. I also think that nutrition is an underutilized tool, and it plays a very key cornerstone in living well with MS. And it gets down to the choices that you make and how you can manage your symptoms around that as well, or how you don't lose control of that nutritional well-being as a consequence of the symptoms you might be experiencing. So just tune into some of those things, and the slides we'll make available afterwards will also help to support that. Also available online is, if you go to nationalmssociety.org and search for Food for Thought, that informational brochure gives some great ideas on how to keep foods on hand in your cupboard, in your refrigerator, in your freezer, that are kind of like your daily emergency preparedness kit. So you have the right things on hand that can help you eat well and help keep meals easy. Also gives you some ideas on where you can find fiber in the diet, and just some general recommendations for healthy eating. So with that, I think what I'd like to do is open up the lines for questions now. And operator?
Ladies and gentlemen, if you have any questions at this time, please press the number one key. Again, if you have any questions at this time, please press the number one key. Our first question is going to come from Natalie. Please go ahead.
Well, I have a question. What are the three F's that you mentioned?
I'm sorry, I didn't hear what you had said.
What are the three F's that you mentioned earlier? F like Frank, you mentioned three of them. What were they?
Oh, yes, I'm sorry. The three F's for managing constipation are fluid, fitness, and fiber. And fluid and fiber are really important. I'll start with fluids and fiber, because if you think about fiber, I'm going to think about a bowl of oatmeal. And when you start with oatmeal, oatmeal's dry. But when you add the water to it or the milk to it to cook it, it kind of puffs up and gets light and puffy. And that's what fluid does to fiber, and that's what allows it to move through the intestinal tract. So it kind of moves like a broom. Now, the fitness part of it comes along in the same way. Fitness helps keep things moving as well. And just by moving, it can help to stimulate that. It's called peristalsis, but it's like if you think about a snake that has swallowed something, you could see that thing by the contractions of the muscles move through the body, and that's exactly how the intestinal tract works, and that's how fitness helps that. So fluid, fitness, and fiber.
Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Our next question is going to come from Deborah. Please go ahead.
Hi. I would like
Hi, Deborah.
To know... Hi. I would like to know how to eat healthily with a very limited income.
Mm-hmm.
Multiple sclerosis has wiped out my finances.
Yeah, I understand that too. Again, I'm going to point you to something in Momentum Magazine a while back, and you could search the Society's website on that. There is an article that I helped to pull together that's called Eating Healthy on a Budget. And so certainly that can be a resource for you.
Okay.
Yeah, eating healthy on a budget. And so just look at eating and budget. You can search there's a search engine on the website that you can just put in whatever you're looking for, and it'll pull that up.
On which website, huh?
NationalMSSociety.org.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Our next question is going to come from Olga. Please go ahead.
I only had something to add, and that is chia seeds. In the same way that you eat flaxseed oil, flaxseeds crushed, the chia seeds you don't have to crush up. You can just add it to cereal or have it in some juice.
Yeah, so you were saying you the beauty of seeds, any seeds are a great source of fiber. Flax seeds have that omega-3, and you're right, you can throw it into salads, you can add them into cereals, you can add them to juice. Did you mention a different type of seed other than flaxseed?
Yes, I mentioned chia seeds.
Oh, chia seeds, yeah. Yeah, so any seeds are a great source of fiber, so that you know. So,
chia seeds, actually, I found out it's not just for fiber, but it acts like an antioxidant too. And people can just research that online. Flaxseed versus chia, both of them are very, very helpful.
Yeah, the other thing with seeds are a source of vitamin E, and vitamin E also is rich in antioxidants. So, you know, each of these seeds, each of the nuts all have different types of nutrients to them. And so this is where variety is key. There isn't any one magic bullet here. So, thank you for sharing that.
Thank you.
Our next question is going to come from Helen. Helen, please go ahead.
Hi, I was just calling to find, I mean, I was just going to inquire if this Food for Thought, if it's a book or it's in the magazine or on the website.
It's a brochure. I want to say like a 25-page brochure. You can actually access it on the Society's website. You can download it and print it out if you'd like. Or you can contact the National MS Society and they can send a copy to you.
Okay, thank you.
But if you want to be green, you can go right onto the website and take a look at it electronically.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Our next question is going to come from Jennifer. Please go ahead.
Hi, I really appreciate you talking about this subject. I felt like kind of I was in a foreign land for years. I've been fighting MS personally, using diet and exercise, and not having any success with any of the medications. And so it's just encouraging to hear it from somebody that knows what they're talking about. But one thing in particular that I found was so important to me, and it may be to others, is sugar and sugar substitutes, and having to just basically eliminate all of them, except for I use stevia and agave nectar and honey. But I've found for years I've had pain and headaches anytime I ate sugar and mm-hmm. and substitutes as well, especially aspartame. And I try to stay away from that as well as MSG. But I really appreciate your comment or your comments tonight, and just wanted to add that sugar thing. Thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome. And I think an important thing to understand about sweeteners as a whole, whether we consider them natural sweeteners or processed sweeteners, and you talked about sugars, and I'll just talk about we talked about healthy fats and unhealthy fats. There are healthy carbohydrates and unhealthy carbohydrates as well. And so as we start looking at refined sugar, there's little nutritional value other than carbohydrates or calories. So we're not getting a lot of extra nutrients from that. An important thing to understand, though, that even honey or brown sugar or raw sugar or even agave, they are still natural sugar. They're sugars. And so once they cross the tongue, the body treats them as sugar. They're glucose. So the nice thing about some of these, though, is that you use less of them for the sweetening power. And so we also have other sources of sugar substitutes out there, like you're talking about stevia. That's a great alternative as well. So again, you can use the less of some of these sweeteners to get the same sweetening power, which helps you reduce the amount of it in the diet. So, but again, they provide little nutritional value, and quite often what accompanies sugar is fat, and fat. we don't need a lot of fat in our diet, and usually if we think about sugar, where do we find it? We find it in cookies and baked goods, and those are the sources of saturated fat, which we want to eliminate anyway, so or minimize, I should say.
Our next question is going to come from Rebecca. Please go ahead.
Hello. I had a question. I've been doing a lot of shopping with pre-cut, pre-washed things because I'm finding that's a lot easier. And I heard recently that the pre-washed lettuce is washed in chlorine. Do you know anything about that?
I imagine that it varies from manufacturer to manufacturer. I don't really know anything about that. I would, you know, if we look at the produce, I will usually rinse all my produce again, if I buy lettuces that way. You know, the other thing is when you have the energy for something, now you can't do it with lettuce, certainly, but you can do it with things that you can when you're cutting something, you know, you can pre-chop if you don't want to pay for something like that. Onion's a great example. I will, if any leftover onion that I have, I'll chop it up, throw it in a little bag and throw it in the freezer, pull it out and cook it for a stew or a soup or something like that. It doesn't need to have that really crispy onion taste.
Oh, that's a great idea. Okay. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Our next question is going to come from Enos. Please go ahead.
Hi. I wanted to know if you see a connection between a gluten-free or limited gluten diet and being able to control uncontrollable bowel movements. Hello?
Sorry about that. I was choking here. The challenge with understanding what's going on in the bowel is not knowing if it's related to something like gluten,
right,
or if it's actually the disease process of MS. And we do know that some individuals, because of the messaging impacted by where the disease is taking place or impacting it can impact your bowel as well. And what constipation can be a symptom related to MS, diarrhea can be as well. So I think that's a conversation to have with your doctor or gastroenterologist.
So there's no connection with the having a gluten-free or limited gluten diet then? That you
For
know
some
of.
People it can, because if it is related to a gluten sensitivity, the consequence of limiting gluten or eliminating gluten in the diet could be an improvement in that as well. So it's an easy test. You know, it's an easy thing to try. It's an easy trial and error kind of thing.
But there
could be other factors as well. So, again, have that conversation with your doctor because they may
Thank
be
you.
Able to see if there's other things too.
Okay, thanks.
Our next question is going to come from Scott. Please go ahead.
Yeah, I was wondering if you've noticed any benefits from the use of cannabis at all for MS patients?
Cannabis, well, certainly from a nutritional perspective, this was funny because I sat in on a panel just recently at our national conference, and one of the consequences of cannabis certainly can be an increase in appetite. So from a nutritional perspective, that could be one of the side effects. Cannabis may have some impact in pain management or spasticity. The jury's kind of out there, and there's more research being done in this area in terms of what the effective component of that, the impact of the effective component of cannabis. I think the concern is also around the negative health effect of smoking cannabis versus ingesting the active compound in a different way. So, and again, like with the negative health effects of smoking, the negative impact on MS itself. So I think this whole area is still being researched and seeing what about cannabis may have a benefit in the symptom management side.
OK, Okay.
But it doesn't necessarily impact the disease process.
Okay. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Our next question is going to come from Celine. Please go ahead.
Hi. I had a question as far as if we assume that a high saturated fat is not good for MS patients, then what is your thought on coconut oil versus, like, say, olive oil?
Mm-hmm. Well, I think so this is, you know, people feel like there are some health benefits to coconut oil, but coconut oil is still a saturated fat. And even with the healthy fats, these are things that we still want to limit in our diet. So whether we choose healthy fats, to have a balance between saturated fats and unsaturated fats, I think, is key. And so where you pick your choices around that is really up to you. I talk about this to people because as you start to read the labels, how do you make those choices around saturated fats? And we see saturated fats and trans fats also on the labels. And if you're trying to make your choices around going as low in saturated fat as possible, then you have to add those two values up on the food label when you're comparing apples to apples. So if you're looking at oils and you're looking at fats and you're looking at shortenings and you're looking at butter, that's one way to look at one way you might want to make your choices. But it's a balancing act, honestly. And less than a third of our fats should come from saturated fats. Another third around poly and a third for monounsaturated fats. So,
right.
I wouldn't necessarily substitute, you know, coconut oil for all other oils in the diet because it's still saturated.
No, I've actually stayed away from it because I've been leery. There seems to be a controversy around it.
Yeah, there is. You know, it is. It's what's out there too. But again, all our fats in our diet are made up of all three of those types of fatty acids, and so just some to more greater extents to the other. So, coconut oil has a benefit certainly from a higher. It can tolerate heat better, as can peanut oil. So there's different uses, but I wouldn't choose it as my sole fat.
Okay. If you had to choose one to cook with, I realize that the high point of olive oil is like 450 degrees before it uses the trans fat. So if you had to pick one to choose, would you consider your base to be olive oil?
Well, no, because olive oil, you don't want to necessarily cook with olive oil. You can go with a canola oil. It has a high level of monounsaturated fats, and it also has a little bit higher polyunsaturated fats than a safflower oil or corn oil. I think the secret in cooking with oils is again, you still want to use it sparingly, is to heat your pan first and get your pan nice and hot, and then add the fat, so add the oil. So if you're going to put a tablespoon of oil in a pan and saute something, then put it in, and after you have that pan hot, and the ripple, once you see that oil ripple, then put the food in, because that minimizes the absorption of oil, and it lets the food cook fast. So breading will double the absorption of oil or fat from a frying process. And again, you could take and make your own spray pan coney. If you like the flavor of an olive oil, even though you can buy those now with spray olive oil, I love to cook, and a chef told me once, take the canola oil, 2/3, and then add 1/3 olive oil. You'll get the flavor of the olive oil and the stability of the canola oil under heat.
And then the second question was, there seems to be a concern with MS and candida. What's your thoughts on that?
I don't really know much about that, but I think we're going to be seeing, you know, when I started talking about the microbiome and the gut bacteria, they're looking at gut bugs. I hate to call them gut bugs, but that's how it's being referred to. But the role of the gut bacteria may play in a lot of different health conditions. And again, around immune modulation, immune triggers, this is a whole area that keep your eyes open on. I think we're going to be seeing much more coming out on this.
Okay. Thank you very much, and thank you for speaking.
You're welcome.
We have a question from Kathy. Please go ahead.
Hi.
Hi.
Oh, sorry. Could you explain the relationship between vitamin D and how it plays a role in preventing inflammation?
Yeah, so I don't know if I actually know how vitamin D prevents inflammation. I think what, and I don't know that vitamin D itself prevents inflammation. From what I understand, it can. I don't know how it impacts the clinical course of the disease, but it does have an impact on adequate levels of D, not necessarily D itself, but adequate blood levels of vitamin D is what we're really looking at, and it's deficiency that causes the worsening. But I don't know how how the immune regulation plays in. I don't know that it's around inflammation, but rather immune regulation. And we're seeing it in other autoimmune conditions as well. So,
okay, so it seems that there's a relationship besides not like a function we don't know yet.
No, and there's research out there. I don't know that I can explain it effectively, but I would recommend checking the Society's website because, like I said, there's vitamin D is really hot right now. The Society pulled together a vitamin D summit of scientists worldwide to take a look at how they're going to power through a very focused approach around vitamin D and the impact of MS. And so that research is going on right now, and some great, great stuff we do know about and more is being revealed. But the details of that on the regulatory T cells are complex, and I don't know that I could do that justice. But there are webinars also online that have had scientists speak to this as well. So check out the Society's website again.
Okay, thank you.
Uh-huh.
We have a question from Tiffany. Please go ahead.
I have two questions. One was, is there anything specifically that we shouldn't be eating? Because one person told me that MS people should avoid eggplant, and I never heard that before.
Yeah, and I don't know that there's any legitimacy to that. I think there's a lot of things that do get promoted out there, and there really isn't any research to support that. I'm a dietitian, and I'll also say I'm a dietitian because I like to eat.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm a big fan of being able to keep things as much as we can in our diet to give us those choices. And so if there isn't a reason to get rid of it, I say if you like eggplant, enjoy eggplant.
Okay, good, because I love eggplant.
good.
Now, also about organic foods, should we, search for organic foods, eat them whenever possible, or it doesn't really matter?
I think organics, from an MS perspective, I don't know that it matters. If there is a concern, organics make a difference, more of a difference, if you're eating the outsides of the produce. So if you're looking, I'll give you an example. If you're eating a banana and you're taking the peel off, it becomes less of an issue around that. But if you're eating the outsides of it where it may be exposed to whatever inorganics may be there, pesticides or whatever one may be concerned about, then you're better to go organic. But organics are expensive, and if that means eating or not eating something like that, I don't know that it's worth the consequence. I don't think it's worth avoiding foods like that. So, going back to the person who asked about, how do I eat on a budget, organics can be a little bit pricey. And so if that means you don't have it, then that's not the consequence we want.
Okay. And then also about eating on a budget, like, I know the 99-cent store always has really good produce, so that might be
yeah.
an option for anybody out there who's concerned about, you know, the money factor as far as eating healthy. So anyway,
yeah, you know what I'll try to do too is I will try to track down that article and I'll forward it to Jackie along with the slides and at least or find the link to it and we'll connect you to that. How's that?
Okay. Yeah, that sounds good. My last question here, my mom just brought this up. Have you ever heard of the antifungal diet, and would that have an impact on people with MS?
No, there is no evidence that has any impact related to MS.
Okay.
There's a lot of different diet plans that we see out there being touted for MS, and there just hasn't been the research around that really points to that. So. Like I said, let's keep our eyes open on some of these new exciting areas that are evolving. And I think we'll see the consequences of that coming out in a nutritional approach. And I just want to say, you know, eating well and the things we're talking about that may impact the progress or the immune modulating effects of the disease, it's to complement what you're doing currently. And diet and exercise and mindfulness meditation are all lifestyle habits that you have control over. So as crazy as MS can be and as unpredictable as it can be, these are the things you do have control over. And together with your care with your physician, it becomes a wonderful complement to managing life with MS. So I kind of want to leave you with that thought and, you know, wish you all the very best in your food choices out there. Eat well.
Okay, thank you.
And we do have a question. Go ahead, I'm sorry.
Oh, go ahead. No, that's okay.
Oh, we had a question from Laura. Please go ahead. Laura, your line is live.
I had a question on, I have a very limited diet. I not only having MS, but a lot of allergies to food, and I found out that I have 32 different allergies to all the grains except oat and corn, and so it makes my diet a little bit smaller than most people, and I didn't know I'm allergic to eggs,
mm-hmm.
and I don't know, probably I'll have to stick more to fruits and vegetables and some protein, but I get wondering which diet is going to be the best.
Well, I think this is one of the things, and anybody who has other health conditions that they may be dealing with need to take those into consideration as well. So there isn't any particular dietary. It sounds like you're dealing with a lot of different complexities, and that really is going to take a tailored approach. And together with, you know, the person that's helping you with your allergies and with a registered dietitian, you can work together in helping to tailor a plan that's right for you. I think with the information that I shared tonight and the information from Food for Thought, you can have that conversation with whoever you're working with your other health concerns, whether you're living with someone's living with diabetes or heart disease, bring this information
right.
to your doctor and help them understand how MS plays into the picture as well. So.
Okay. Thank you, and thank you for being on the air with us.
Sure.
Our next question is going to come from Olin. Please go ahead.
Hello.
Hi there.
I was wondering if there's any difference in the herbs that you buy at the store for ornamental and what you use in your cooking and what role it plays in what you eat?
I'm not quite sure when you say herbs that are ornamental. Can you give me an example of that?
Like when you go to the store and you buy parsley and thyme and rosemary and that stuff,
mm-hmm.
Does it make any difference what kind or what brand or are they all
no,
the same or
no,
which ones
it doesn't
are
make
eating,
if you're buying fresh herbs, it doesn't matter what brand you necessarily buy. Fresh herbs or dried herbs. You would use.
I'm trying to grow them.
Yeah, that's great to be able to grow your own fresh herbs. It's a great way to avoid, you know, sodium and salt in your diet as well. You tend to need. Let me see if I'm going to get this right. I may misspeak on this, but I think you may need to use more with fresh herbs than with dried herbs. So. You may need to use a greater amount in a recipe when compared to using dry herbs.
Okay, but what about the seeds?
I thought I heard you say that you need to crush the seeds.
That's for flax seeds. So flax seeds, if you want to get the omega-3 from flax seeds, it's important that you crush the seeds. Seeds will go in, pretty much go out the same way they come in. And so in order to make that omega-3 fatty acid available for absorption, you just take a little rolling pin in a baggie and put your seeds in it and crush it. It's very simple. Or you could put them in a food processor or a coffee grinder or something like that.
Other seeds, you just go and throw them in your oatmeal, though, right?
I'm sorry?
Other kinds of seeds, you can just go and throw those in your oatmeal and cook them in your oatmeal, right?
Yeah, sure. Absolutely.
So any of the herbs, no matter what the first name is, if it says a specific type, it's okay to eat them?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, okay.
Yep.
Thank you.
Sure. So I think we are certainly coming to the end. I know we've gone a little bit over. Again, I want to thank everybody for joining us this evening. If you have questions related to nutrition or if you have questions just related to MS, I know Jackie shared with you the Society is an amazing source of current and accurate information. Don't ever hesitate to call. That number is a toll-free number, 1-800-344-4867. We have some great, knowledgeable specialists there who certainly can answer your questions just about anything related to MS or life with MS. So I leave you with that, and we'll be back in touch with you with the resources that are a part of this program tonight. Thanks for calling.
Oh, one moment. We have a three-question survey at the end.
Okay.
Our first polling question for this evening is, I recognize that how I eat could impact my fatigue. Press 1 for yes and press 2 for no. Polling has closed for this question. Give me one moment while I tally the results. Thank you. Our second question for this evening is, I learned at least one strategy that I found helpful to make healthy eating more manageable. Press 1 for yes and press 2 for no. Polling has closed for this question. Give me one moment while I tally the results. And our third and final question for this evening is, I better understand how aspects of my diet relate directly to MS. Press 1 for yes and press 2 for no. calling us close for this question. Give me one moment while I tally the results. Thank you, ladies and gentlemen. This concludes our polling session. I think this is the end of the call. You may all disconnect. You have a wonderful evening.